Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. Another distribution has joined LinuxQuestions.org. Please welcome Zenwalk Linux. I'd like to thank Michael for working with me to get the Zenwalk forum set up. Forum will have participation from the Zenwalk creator and multiple Zenwalk contributors. Welcome to LQ. Just a quick heads up that the old bookmarks.linuxquestions.org site is now being redirected to the new www.linuxquestions.org/bookmarks site. Remember that the new site does use an integrated login, so once you're logged into LQ, you are logged in to the new LQ bookmarks. All the old tags and user entries from the old site are now being redirected to the new site. Now, on to the news. The first story I have is Real to plug Windows Media Support into Linux. So it looks like Real Networks will release open source software this year that will let Linux computers play Windows Media files. No word on if Real will ever open its own codec, though, unfortunately. This deal is, quote, a result of a licensing deal Real Networks signed with Microsoft and its settlement of an antitrust suit against the software giant, end quote. It's definitely good to see companies actually starting to focus on the codec problem we currently have on desktop Linux, but I'm not sure what this gets us that, say, FFmpeg, when used with the LiveAV codec, doesn't already offer, although I could be missing something. On a related note, Novell is going to ship this with SLED, which is really looking like it could be a popular product at this point, and as I mentioned before, is something I'd like to try out. The next story I have is IBM takes pot shots at OpenSolaris. In a trend that seems to be increasing lately, and not just with IBM definitely, IBM recently took the time to deride Sun on OpenSolaris. While I'd agree that Sun has been a bit skittish at times and has certainly waffled more on open source than any of us would have liked, saying that, quote, OpenSolaris isn't a true open source product, end quote, is a bit disingenuous at best. OpenSolaris does fall under an approved OSI license, and it's therefore 100% forkable, so it really is open source. Now, whether Sun is doing all it can to foster an active community, which really was at the crux of the contention that IBM made, that's a whole nother issue, but the wording in the article really seemed just like headline grabbing, which of course, in my opinion, is not really how things should go. Here's a couple quotes from the article. Quote, Sun holds it all behind the firewall. The community sees nothing, Dan Fry, the IBM vice president who runs the company's Linux Technology Center, said Tuesday in an interview at the Linux World Conference and Expo. It's a facade. There's lots of marketing, but no community to speak of. End quote. The origin of this was that IBM was concerned that OpenSolaris could become a competitive threat, and Fry assigned a programmer to monitor the OpenSolaris kind of goings-ons. The company then concluded that there was indeed no threat. I guess if there was absolutely no threat, why would they be talking about it in the first place? The reality here is that IBM and Sun have both done just a ton to help open source. They both contributed massive amounts of code, countless man hours, and much more. And especially on the IBM side, the mindshare that they got Linux by backing it was absolutely instrumental, I think, in its uptake, especially in the enterprise. In the end, this seems like a cheap shot with not a lot of upside. And I would say, come on guys, you're better than that. But one can only hope that sensationalist journalism spun this into more than it was meant to be. And these days, the odds of this are unfortunately quite high, and I wouldn't doubt if it was a quote pretty much taken out of context and then spun up by the very... I've seen this article in a couple different publications, and with a title like IBM takes pot shots at OpenSolaris, it could be them just playing up that angle, which is unfortunate. The next story I have is Open Source Guru Advocates Ideological Shift. So I have to admit, I was a bit surprised after reading this article, which was in the Register a couple days ago. It included some quotes such as the following. Quote, Eric Raymond has told the community that painful compromises are needed to the way it deals with closed source platforms and formats to avoid losing ground on desktops and new media players. Raymond said the community is not moving fast enough to engage with non-technical users whose first choice platform is either an iPod, MP3 player, or a Microsoft desktop running Windows Media Player. Binary drivers are considered an evil for open source because of their proprietary nature. However, Raymond called support for them in Linux a necessary compromise. Raymond, a champion of all things open source, said it is vital to the future uptake of Linux that the community compromise to win the new generation of non-technical users aged younger than 30. This group is more interested in having Linux just work on their iPod or MP3 player and don't care about our notions of doctrinal purity. End quote. Now I want you to take a moment to kind of process those quotes and remember that they all came from Eric Raymond. Now, while I completely agree that Linux far, far too often does not engage with non-technical users, that's sort of by design and it's really ingrained into how things have worked in Linux pretty much from the get-go. Now to be fair, that's changing. And the reason that it's kind of ingrained is that Linux historically was a kind of a by programmers, for programmers kind of project. There was marketing never led the direction and still doesn't. And so things tend to have a technical slant. There's really never had a voice. But with the entrance of companies like Novell and Linspire, that's really no longer the case. And now there actually are, between GNOME and KDE, multiple usability studies of getting real non-technical users sitting in front of these to test what they're doing and what they're not understanding. You have companies like Linspire focused solely on end users. So the non-technical users not having a voice definitely is going to be a thing of the past. Now, what I disagree with is the assertion that, quote, the end of the 64-bit transition happens at the end of 2008. After that, the operating system gets locked in for the next 30 years, end quote. Now, I honestly don't see how a move to 64-bit is going to lock an EOS in. There's just no logical progression there that I can see. People, and especially on the desktop here, just are not clamoring for the 32 to 64-bit conversion right now. While it makes sense on the server where you might need to malloc 8 gigs of memory for Oracle or for some other memory-intensive app, the real benefits just really aren't applicable for the average desktop PC. In fact, I would contend these days most new computers are far more powerful than the average desktop user needs. If all you're using is Firefox and OpenOffice, you just don't need that powerful of a computer. What I guess is that we'll see a slow transition whereby people will get 64-bit by default as they upgrade their PCs and buy new ones that just happen to be 64-bit, and they won't even know it happened. Because they won't know what happened, I'd hesitate to call it a major architectural shift, at least not compared with the painful 16 to 32-bit change that happened a while back. Now, because of this, I'll go back to something I've covered quite a bit here. That's why I think OEM Linux deals are so important. The average user simply doesn't care about the OS. In fact, most people don't even go to a store and buy Windows. They get Windows by buying a PC. And if we want to make real inroads with Linux, that's the way it needs to be. If we're going to depend on people buying PCs either with no OS or with Windows and then buying a box or buying a download or just downloading it for free to install Linux, it will never happen. And this really brings me back to another topic that I've discussed before, ad nauseum really at this point. What are we as a community willing to give up to get mainstream Linux adoption? Now, I completely agree with ESR that painful compromises will be needed to gain more desktop penetration. Probably very painful compromises. Which is why I still question if the Linux we'd end up with is a Linux we'd all still be so passionate about. In the past, I've indicated that I was unsure about this, and unfortunately, I really haven't come to any further conclusions on that. It's a very precarious thing, though, and I don't think people appreciate that there's a very real chance that at some point, Linux could end up being a victim of its own success, at least in many ways. Luckily, our communities are varied and very, very resilient. While we're divided on many topics, in the end, I hope we have the fortitude to persevere, and I really think we do. Another thing, and I do recommend you go over to the Register and read the full article. This article really brings up a couple other topics, but due to the length that I'd like to discuss those, I'm going to break them out into additional podcast topics in a future podcast. And some of those include binary drivers and Linux with the iPod and working with commercial and proprietary software vendors. So that the article really is a good one. He brings up some great points, some points I'd like to discuss, but I'm going to kind of break it up just so it's not too long. The next story I have is fresh rumors erupt over Red Hat Oracle buy. So if there are multiple rumors that I covered in previous podcasts that Oracle would offer Red Hat support, the new rumor seems to be that Oracle will simply acquire Red Hat. While Oracle certainly has the cash to do this, I can't see the logic of it really from either side. The rumors include numbers as high as $6 billion, and even the low end of this appears to be about $5 billion. Beyond the cash, though, it would really complicate things on the Oracle side of the house. If you noticed how they're growing lately, it's by going up the stack. So to change that growth and push down the stack and then have to support an OS, and a lot of people, of course, want the OS but don't want anything to do with Oracle, the product, or any of the middleware apps. It's going to vary their support requirements. It's going to really add a large deal of complexity on the Oracle side. On the Red Hat side, it would likely cause irreparable damage to their, you know, quote-unquote open source image. And Red Hat has really worked quite a bit to build that image. And while you do hear the occasional support horror story, you're going to hear that with any large company, unfortunately. Someone's going to have a bad experience, and who knows where the problem really lied in that issue, but when you have a bad experience, you tend to play it up, and a couple of those recently have gotten a lot of press. I guess in the end, while you never know, and Oracle has pulled off the acquisitions of multiple open source companies recently, such as Sleepy Cat and Innobase, none of them were the size of Red Hat. And if you look at it from one angle, I think Red Hat has a very real vision, and one that could not be achieved if they were just a vestige of Oracle. I think they have some pretty big plans there. Now, Novell, on the other hand, seems like a more likely acquisition target if I had to pick one out of the blue. They're a bit more closed-source friendly due to their history, and they're struggling right now financially, so they'd probably be a bargain comparatively. Of course, there are other options. Oracle, as discussed before, could assemble their own support team, or what they could do, what might be interesting, is scoop up a smaller distribution, and not for the distribution itself, but to get their hands on a small, experienced, talented team, and then do what they want with the team from there. In the end, I think it seems pretty certain that Oracle will eventually could be, I think, medium term, do something in the Linux distribution space. It's just not clear what. I'm guessing that when it finally does happen, though, it will be a new chapter in the way that Linux is looked at by a lot of non-open source people. The last story I have is Microsoft Patch Open Users to Attack. As I'm sure you all know, Microsoft has spent a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of money trying to improve their image in the security realm. A part of that was gaining mindshare among admins so that patches would be trusted and deployed in an expeditious manner. You know, the best patch in the world is no good if everyone doesn't deploy it because they're afraid it's going to make things unstable. Now, to be honest, it seems that the Microsoft vision goes as far as to hope that everyone will simply enable automatic updates and have this all just done immediately, instantaneously, and automatically. But obviously, and for a variety of reasons, and reasons that I would consider very good reasons, that simply just hasn't been the case. Now, recently, Microsoft has been taking a fair amount of heat for machines rebooting despite automatic updates being off, and I'm sure a lot of you saw the story also in the Register that someone actually sent Bill Gates an invoice because they had a bunch of applications open and the machine rebooted despite automatic updates being lost, and they basically sent him a bill for the time it took to recover the information that was lost because of the reboot. And the media and blogosphere has just been having a field day with this one. In the midst of all that, though, Microsoft released a patch that fixed about 8 issues, but also actually opened a completely new vulnerability up. In addition to the new vulnerability, it also causes IE to crash, unfortunately for them, in a variety of business-critical applications. And we're talking things like PeopleSoft and Siebel and Sage CRM. And not only that, but pretty much any site, I guess, that uses HTTP 1.1 compression will also cause it to crash once the patch has been applied. So additionally, what's exacerbating an obviously already bad situation is that the proposed fix for the fix, or patch for the patch, I guess you could call it, has now missed its target release date, which was August 22nd, and is currently being delayed indefinitely. Now, when you have someone at a large security firm, and this is EI, saying things like, quote, they basically butchered the patch, it just doesn't inspire a lot of confidence. These couple incidences, which are kind of snowballed on top of each other and all happened in the same week, will almost certainly undo much of the work that Microsoft has done in the, quote, improving their security image front. Additionally, they make you wonder just how much they'll be able to deliver on the promises security-wise that they made for Vista. The fact that part of the issues definitely still seems to be procedural here and not technical, in my opinion, doesn't bode well. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.